Hey there. Welcome to the Confident Healer Podcast. So each week you'll hear intimate conversations from mostly BIPOC and BIPOC LGBTQIA plus healerpreneurs who will share their journey about confidence in life and in business. This show is for you, the emerging healers, the new and seasoned healerpreneurs, because we want you to know you are not alone, that you don't need to suffer and think no one else knows the struggle of being a healer and a healerpreneur. When we share resources, stories, and innovative ideas, we all thrive, we all succeed, and we all create a collective confidence for others to pull from. I hope you feel more uplifted, inspired, and confident so you can change more lives in your healing business and your own life. And with that, let's roll right into this week's episode. This very first episode to kick off the podcast is also very, very sexy. I got to speak with my dear friend and colleague, Angelica Gutierrez. We actually met a few years back when we were both part of a large spiritual business coaching program. She is a sexual radiance coach. So you'll hear about how sexiness is all about loving yourself and finding confidence. We talk about where the origins of her confidence comes from, how her childhood interests became the foundation for the work that she does today, teaching positive and healthy sexuality. I also want to let you know that there is a trigger warning concerning childhood sexual abuse, so it may not be safe for impressionable ears or safe for work. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Angelica. So welcome to the Confident Healer Podcast with your hostess with the mostest, Sharmila Molly. This is the very first episode, the inaugural episode. And today I have the very first guest for the Confident Healer Podcast, my very good friend, my dear confidant, my fellow lover of life, who is also the founder and owner of sexual radiance coaching company, Sexy. That's S-X-Y, Sexy. You get it? She has 20 years experience working with individuals in healing sexual traumas, helping people refuse cultural ideals in an effort to empower individuals and reclaiming their sexual identity in order to live a more expansive, creative, and pleasurable life. She has also worked in Europe, where she lived for a decade. She's worked in Africa and is now based in Seattle, Washington, in the United States, for those of you who don't know where Seattle, Washington is. So a big round of applause. And with a deep, big, welcoming hug, let's welcome my very dear friend and sexual radiance coach, Angelica Gutierrez. Yay, welcome. We are silently clapping.
Yes, thank you so much for that introduction, Sharmila Molly. That was really nice.
Yes, we are going to go by first and last name. So Angelica Gutierrez. Seriously, though, Angelica Gutierrez. No, seriously, Angelica. So tell us, so this is the Confident Healer Podcast, and we will delve into what motivates your confidence, how you grow your confidence in your business, what keeps you going. But first, I want to tell everyone, what is a sexual radiance coach?
Well, a sexual radiance coach, that is, has got to be the most popular question that I get. And so I have rehearsed the response to this 100,000 times, and it may change. So those of you that have heard it before, the theme is the same. The words may change. A sexual radiance coach, by my definition, is someone that helps you to find your own strength, your own empowerment, your own inner confidence to own your sexuality, which is an integral part of who we are as human beings. Our sexual energy is connected to creativity, to fluidity, stability. And so my job is to help you to come back into your own internal power and live from an empowered place in order to live a more fulfilling life. And so in a nutshell, that is what sexual radiance coaching is, to help you radiate from the inside out.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It's a beautiful calling that you've answered to. And I think that's what we all want, is to radiate from the inside. And you're doing it through sexuality, through being sexy. Why is that important to be sexy? What does that mean to you?
When we are living in our own sexual power, we become alluring, sometimes mysterious, magnetic. And those are all positive traits. And when we are giving off or radiating this kind of energy, we will attract like energy. So for example, if you're coming from a place of power, right? Because you feel confident in yourself, because you are owning your sexuality, because you are owning the fact that you are a sexual being, we, without even using words, we will emanate a boundary. And so certain people may feel from you like, oh, that's not someone that I can just say anything to, even though I find them very attractive and I want to be with them. So being sexy is important, because sexy is not just about, I mean, I say this in all of my workshops, it's not about cleavage or showing your beautiful legs or your pumps or, you know, that's not really sexy. It's a part of it, right? Because appearance is super important, but that's not for everybody, right? Not every woman likes heels and cleavage. Or to show it off. And not everybody has the body for that anyway. So it's really not about an image, the way that we have been fed by the culture. It really is about our own empowerment. And when we own our sexual and creative energy, we're owning our entire selves, not just a part of ourselves. I don't know if this is making sense to you, and I'm happy to expand if you need clarification.
No, I mean, well, this is the confident healer, because we are talking about confidence. And I agree with that, in order to feel empowered, to feel powerful, to be, you know, quote unquote, your best self, it's all about confidence. It's all about the radiance that you are exuding, how you feel about yourself. So yeah, no, that, I think that makes perfect sense. And I think you articulated that beautifully. And I just love that what you do is you are basically empowering others. You were talking about women. Do you also work with men too? Is it just, or are your clients primarily women? Or excuse me, those that identify as women?
I work with both. And I say both genders, right? Male and female, regardless of how they identify. I do tend to get more women. I think that's because, at least from my male clients, and they're not all very proud to say, hey, I'm seeing a sex coach, right? There's some taboo maybe for them. So no, I work with both genders, regardless of sexual identification. For me, the most important thing is not really whether you're a male or female, or female identifying or male identifying. The most important thing is that when we have our complimentary session, which I offer before we decide to work together, and it's about 30 minutes on average, that is where we determine whether or not we're a good fit to work together. And so that to me is the key, right? And then if we're not suited to one another, fortunately, I do have a network of professionals that I can always refer out to.
That's always good to have, but that's amazing. That's amazing. So just going back to your bio that I was reading, And I think you might have touched on this, but I just want to delve a little deeper into that about when you're talking about you're helping people refuse cultural ideals of, you know, I guess what is sexuality, how certain genders need to be. Is that what you're talking about in terms of cultural ideals?
Yeah, I guess more or less. What I mean is, you know, there's a prescription for women with regards to sexiness. Right. And that's what I was talking about before, the, you know, the classic, you know, bikini or, you know, the classic tall and extra slim person. You know, for men, it's more the, you know, the buff body. Right. Mm-hmm. And so these are all cultural ideas that we don't all fit into. You know, we don't all have a 6-12 pack. We don't all have long, beautiful legs, right? With a golden tan. You know, we don't all have beautiful big blue eyes and blonde hair. I mean, it's the truth is that most of us don't fit into that box that has been created for the quote unquote sexy people. And so that is why it's important that we learn that the messages we're getting from society and from our culture are not necessarily truth. And that's for us to kind of claim and stand up to and say, no, you are not going to define who I am as a sexual being. I will decide that.
Mm-hmm. And I think we, especially in American culture, we see that now with all the, you know, non-binary, or even when talking about what people's sexual preferences are, some people don't want to define it. Like, well, I like everything. And is that something that you also deal with? Is that something you also help people with, is kind of helping people to define that, or, if they are confused about their sexual identity, do you help people with that too?
Mm-hmm. Good question. I help people unpack that. I don't help people with where they want to fit in as a label. If they want a label, do they want to be in a certain category? Mm-hmm. I don't feel that that's my job to say, okay, well, you are this and that. What I do is help people unpack. So where, you know, where do your preferences lie? You know, what do you like? How do you see yourself? How do you feel? And so we work with predominantly what the person is struggling with, what may be the challenges. You know, some people decide, you know, I'm not going to label myself at all. You know, I'm actually one of those people. A lot of my friends, might say, oh, you know, you're a lesbian, right? I don't consider myself a lesbian just because I have been in long-term relationships with women and not so much with men. I consider myself sexually fluid, and I prefer to call myself that if there has to be a label. So yes and no. I help people to really unpack, kind of dig deep and see where do I lie in the spectrum, and then they can decide for themselves where they identify on that continuum, on that sexual continuum. Mm.
If you had to put a label, you just labeled yourself as sexual fluid. What exactly does that mean?
For me, my definition of sexually fluid is someone that, again, is not attracted to either male or female. I happen to be attracted to whoever I'm attracted to. And I don't have an orientation, if you will. Do I have a preference? Probably yes, but not necessarily an orientation. And that has changed throughout my life, which is why I use the word fluid. So, for example, when I was much younger, I had no idea that what I was feeling toward women was sexual. It wasn't until later in my life that I was able to identify that. And I had, you know, mostly, you know, male partners. Later on, when I understood what I was feeling and thinking about other women, I labeled myself as bisexual. And then when I fell in love with a woman, I was okay with being called lesbian. Mm. But the truth is that that those labels never change who I'm attracted to. And that has changed over time. You know, really in this stage of my life right now, I would say that I'm certainly in the fluid, you know, in the fluid aspect of things, you know, seeing what happens, what comes, who it's more for me, it's energetic, you know, do we have a intellectual connection? Do we have a physical attraction? So these are all the things that I look at when I, or what I guess what I'm referring to when I say sexually fluid.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for that. Because I think a lot of cisgendered people like myself get a little confused, like, well, what does that mean, sexual fluidity?
Oh, I said, I hope that that helped to clarify what, at least what my definition of sexual fluidity means.
Yeah, it does. Thank you. Well, thank you, Angelica, for getting so personal. So as we're talking in that area, in that neighborhood, let's dive a little deeper. Because no, I seriously, I think that coming out in this society has been a dangerous thing in the past. It's a little less dangerous now. In most, well, I'm going to say in most parts of American society. So you identify as Latina, correct?
Mm-hmm. I would probably say at this point, Latinx.
Latinx. Okay. Latinx.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm really working with the fluid part.
Okay.
And so Latinx fits into the fluidity of it all.
Got it. I wasn't sure. Thank you for correcting me. So I know that you know.
That's fine too, though, just to say Latinx.
Okay.
Is fine. I'm just
okay.
Saying.
Well, as a Latinx woman, because I know you identify as a woman, did you grow up Catholic? Like, how did that impact you and your ideals of, because this all has to do with confidence. So if you are, feel more confident in who you are, and that meaning, you know who it is that you want to be with, what it is you want to do, you know, just in all areas of your life, you know, just how you carry yourself throughout your life. Was that a factor? Was that hard? There's so many things I want to ask. Was that hard coming out to your family, coming from the Latinx culture? And you're specifically Puerto Rican, right? Because I mean, I know, like, I've had so many different Latinx friends, and I know that's a huge part of it. And sometimes that can be, some of them still hide it from their family. So was that, just tell us about that experience.
Yeah. You know, for me, and I know I'm not alone in this. Yes, I grew up believing we were Catholic. And I say that because we didn't go to church every Sunday, but there, we know I did my first communion, right? My grandmother had, the Virgin Mary statue all over her house, especially at Christmas. And we were taught, you know, our Lord's Prayer, take communion whenever we'd pass by a church, you know, you'd kneel and do the sign of the cross. So yes, I grew up with the Catholic influence. I grew up thinking that pretty much everything was wrong. everything was wrong, such as drinking is wrong, even though that's what my family did every weekend. no, sex before marriage was wrong.
Whoops.
And we had quite a few people pregnant before marriage in my family. So, you know, lots of contradictions. And when I...
Which life is full of, by the way, and that's what makes life sexy.
And interesting.
Yes. Sorry, go ahead.
The contrast. No. So going back to the question about, you know, coming out to my Latino family, well, it was freaking hard because I grew up hearing, I was the oldest of, if I'm not mistaken, it is 47 grandchildren.
What?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of us. Well, there's less now. We've passed. Some of us have passed on. And I, being the oldest on my mom's side, I don't know if 47 is both my family's, maybe not. Maybe that's just one side. But anyway, I think it's just my mom's side.
Wait, how many siblings does your mom have? Or did somebody just have a bunch of, did everybody have like 20 kids?
In total, my grandfather had 16 children. My grandmother and my grandfather had 11 together. And then each had anywhere between 2 and 5 children.
Wait a minute. Holy mother of God.
These are the legitimate ones. I don't even know if we have any illegitimates running around, but that's possible. We're Puerto Rican. Joking. So I'm not trying to give a name. I'm just joking.
sorry, Angelica's mom for reading. I was hearing this. Your grandparents, so your mom grew up in Puerto Rico and she came to...
My mom came to the U.S. when she was 11.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so then her siblings obviously were all younger. And my dad came when he was a little older, teenager. But they grew up in New York City. That's where they met, in the Bronx. And coming from a family, the only time that I heard people talking about being gay was when someone would leave and be like, oh, do you think that they're gay? Or I'm not sure that she's
really? Gay. Oh my sure God. He's- The whispers.
You know, and I used to be like, I don't know. But I also didn't think it was a problem because, like I was saying, the messages were, can't wait for you to get married. Because I was the oldest. And so my aunt would be like, so when are you going to get married? Especially one of my favorite aunts who's passed on now. But she used to be like, mira, when are you going to get married? And he's cute. What's happening with him? You know, I was in high school. I'm like, Jesus, married, you know? And actually marriage was a big turnoff for me. But when I admitted and accepted that I really was genuinely attracted to women, I thought I would never have to come out the closet. But then what happens? I fell in love in grad school with a woman. And
so how old were you?
I was a late bloomer. So I went to grad school at 27.
Okay. Wow.
And I met a woman there that, I was totally taken by, and I fell in love with her. And I thought, well, if I'm ever going to come out, this is it. Cause I'm actually in love. And, I thought I was grown. Well, I was 27.
Yeah.
You know, a woman. And so I planned to tell my parents, and this is actually a funny story. And so my mom has always been the open one out of my parents, and my dad's been the closed one. Well, for some reason, the day that I was introducing this woman from grad school, we were in New York. That's where we went to school. And my family was living in Connecticut. So, you know, I told her all about my family, and, you know, she was also Puerto Rican, and we had lots of similarities. And I was like, oh, my family's going to love you. So I told my dad, I was like, can you please make a nice dinner for my best friend? You know, that was my...
Wow.
And so he made, arroz con gandules, and I think he made pollo guisado, which is like rice and pigeon peas and stewed chicken. I'm sorry for the vegan.
Oh my gosh, I'm so hungry.
This is how we grew up, sorry. And my dad was an amazing cook. Well, the funny thing is my dad was so happy to meet this woman, and my mom was still in her PJs when we got there. And I was like, that is so unlike my mom. And she brought my mom this plant that she specifically picked out for my mom. And my mom, she gave it to my mom. And my mom was like, thank you. And I was like, oh. And my mom is like so fucking flippin' sweet. I'm so sorry. So sweet.
You can curse. It's fine. I'll put a disclaimer.
Okay. My mom is so sweet. Anyone that knows my mom, she's adorable. She's so sweet. So I was shocked, and I apologized to her. I was like, I am so, so sorry. I did not expect this. My dad stayed staring into space. I didn't know what to say. I was totally uncomfortable with the silence. So the only thing I could say to kind of get him to blink was, well, I still like men. There's still hope. I didn't know what to say. I was like,
so wait.
I'm
so
bisexual.
So let's just go back. So you were in love. I'm just trying to, for those that are still trying, you know, coming to terms with their sexuality and how to tell their loved ones, like, what can you walk us, if you can remember, the confidence to the courage and the courage and the confidence, or was it just courageous and like, you know, did you do a shot of something? You know, like,
no shots, no drugs.
Was there courage or confident? What is that's a question we can come to in a minute, but walk us through that confidence of setting up a dinner and like, this is my friend, come meet my best friend for dinner, make a nice dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm. Well, you know,
that takes a lot of, you know, cojones.
Oh yes, that's right. That is about right. Muchos cojones. Yes. And I do have them. I was born with cojones. That's why I don't like to identify and fit in a box, because my parents will tell you I had a mouth. And I still do. I can't help that part, but it was more courage. And because I was such a bossy person and a leader, you know, being the oldest of four siblings, I got into the habit early on of telling my parents what I wanted and how I was going to live my life. It was like I was training them. So, oh my God, if I were my parents, my parents were nice, I'm telling you, because I've been like, let me just tell you something. But I learned somehow that if I was the one that, because I learned, right, that I had, this is really interesting actually, though, that I'm saying this. I learned that being born and raised in the United States, I had a completely different experience of the United States than my parents. Mm-hmm. So I kind of thought I knew better. Right. Like, I know the culture. So I'm going to tell you when I'm 18, I'm flipping, moving out. I'm telling you that this is what's going to happen when I turn this age. I know my rights. That was my thing.
Right.
When I'm 16. I can decide to quit school if I want to. And you can't tell me nothing. Just claiming my rights. So I kind of did that in grad school. I just kind of dictated in a very gentle way. I mean, I really did present this woman as like, I said, she's one of us. Cause she really was like, I mean, I went to her family gatherings and was very similar to my family. And so that was kind of nice. But yeah, it was more courage. It was courage. And I wasn't living at home, right? I left at an early age. So that helps, the, you know, being removed. This woman had been out for a while. She was also Puerto Rican, like I said. And so I just asked her, you know, how did your parents take it? And I talked to her and maybe one other person, some of my really good friends from grad school that I spoke to. And I just said, you know what? I love her and I don't know where we're going to go, but this person is worth me telling my family that this is part of my identification. Mm. And this is part of, you know, the way that I love.
Mm.
And it was courage. I was, I was nervous as hell, but I found, I just went in. And sometimes, you know, we have to kind of like put our blinders on, you know, like when you're about to go diving in a pool, right? Mm-hmm. You're at one point, you're going to have to hold your nose and jump in. Right. And that's kind of like what happened for me. It was like, this is it. And I felt like it was now or never, because if I lost, I mean, I knew that intellectually, I know that I eventually would have come out anyway, if I had fallen in love with someone else later. But in that moment, it was just like, this is it. I'm just going to come out. The sooner I do it, the better. And that's how it was. And my dad, when I said, there's still hope, he looked at me. And that was it. I remember my siblings just sitting there, like, everybody's just staring at him. Like,
yeah, well, you dropped a bomb.
Clearly, massively. And, you know, my dad never really accepted it until, I would say, very recently before he passed, that he accepted my partnership with my ex, which was painful, you know. Yeah. So I had to accept that maybe this was not going to go well. I had to accept that maybe my partner would not be part of my family in the way that I would want them to be. And that was really hard. I think that was harder for me than anything, because I was worried about somebody else's feelings. You know, hurting someone else. I was kind of used to my family. So even though it's hurtful, I was accustomed to that. So yeah, I hope that wasn't too long-winded, but that happened.
That's a great story. No, I love hearing people's coming out stories, like how they did that. And, cause sometimes it's really, I mean, it went really well for the most part. you know, and looking back, mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. that was like, what, I don't know how many decades ago.
That was 20 years ago. I've just aged myself.
Oops.
That was 20 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
I can't believe that. It's weird.
So this is it's just a natural segue into your own confidence and what gives you confidence. So it sounds like just being the oldest one growing up in the Bronx. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I've met a lot of Puerto Ricans from the Bronx, and there's a lot of swagger, I can say, and that has a lot to do with confidence. But like, what? I mean, obviously that shaped you. Did you feel? And it sounded like, at least in your family dynamics, you sounded to me very confident. Like, where did that come? Where did Angelica Gutierrez's confidence come from? Can you track it?
Yeah, absolutely. My grandmother.
Oh.
Lidia Margarita.
Is this your mom's side or your dad's side?
My mom.
Is she the one that had the 17, 16?
She had 11.
She had 11. Gosh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, you know, we moved from the Bronx when I was little. And I have to say, I wasn't always confident. I had partial confidence because when growing up in Connecticut and traveling to New York pretty much every weekend, every summer, I struggled with my own identity because in New York,
identity
I was Puerto Rican. As a person, right? So in New York, I was Puerto Rican. In Connecticut, they were like, I wasn't white, I wasn't black. And I couldn't really identify with the Puerto Ricans from the island because I didn't grow up in the island. So I really struggled with my confidence for a very, very long time. And also I had lots of female enemies, you know, and I only felt comfortable when I was in New York with my family. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel so confident in Connecticut because I was one of the few Puerto Ricans in the group. And that was hard for me to like own because I didn't know what it was in that context.
Mm-hmm. So when you say, so you didn't feel confident in a social setting, but like academically, because confidence, I think, I don't know if anyone's across the board confident in everything. There's varying levels of it. There's dynamics of it. So when you're saying, well, I wasn't very confident. So are you talking about like as a whole or just like in social settings? But I guess if you don't feel confident in yourself, then I think that affects everything else.
Mm-hmm. I didn't feel confident in my identity in mm-hmm. Connecticut. But I was actually a confident kid. I was always told I was super cute, right? And I loved it. I didn't really know that being cute was like a thing that was going to be work against some people as they got older. I just liked the attention as a little girl, you know, and my aunts would always tell me, posea, posea, which is pose. Oh. And so I was a confident kid in that sense. And I was always in parades and smiling for pictures. And I was just like, I loved the spotlight when I was little. So I was confident in that sense. Where I started to lose my confidence was when I started to get older and hanging out with what my parents would call American kids, even though I was American, right?
Right.
And so that just meant non-Latino children. And so for me, it was like, I wasn't sure who I really was. I always felt fat as I was a little, you know, kind of chunky, but definitely not a fat kid. But, you know, I did have a little belly sometimes. And, you know, as I got older, I lost it, whatever. But there was a huge gap. And I felt confident by watching my grandmother. My grandmother was this fierce, cute, adorable Puerto Rican lady. She was shorter than me. She was like 4'10", of course. She's a cute powerhouse. Did not let anybody tell her what to do, how to do it. She was loving, kind, and not afraid of anything or anyone. She was an entrepreneur. She didn't speak English, but she did whatever she could. I was her translator, so I had to be in appointments with her throughout the city. I'd go with her shopping for merchandise. So I always had this leadership role, especially with my grandmother, And watching her gave me a lot of confidence. And I was like, I want to be like her. Like, I want to be like my grandmother. And that was my major, 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 major influence in my life for confidence. Like, she, I would see her fierceness and how she wasn't afraid of anybody or anything. And that to me was like amazing. And just to give you an example, she used to wear lots of jewelry, gold jewelry, mm-hmm. and tight clothes and stuff. And she'd go out in the subway and she would come home and be like, oh, what happened to your jewelry? She's like, I was robbed on the subway. And we're like, oh my God, be careful. You can't go out. You can't do that. She's like, I don't care. She'd go and buy new jewelry and go right back out. Mm. And she robbed again. And she would just keep buying. And I'm like, shit. Oh, Jesus Christ. Like, my grandmother's crazy. But she's like, I'm not going to let anybody scare me into not doing what I want. So that is my main. And I feel very fortunate that I had a woman as an example and my grandmother of all people, right? She was obviously a lot older than me. And she's not your traditional hero. You know, she didn't go to college. I don't even know if my grandmother finished high school, but she bought her house. She bought a car. She, you know, toward the end of her life, she was working as a bartender at the beach in Puerto Rico because she ended up moving back there. I mean, she's this amazing, fierce woman and never stopped living. And even the day she passed, I understood later she knew that her time was around the corner. And she still went ahead.
Right.
You know, and I was just like, God. So that is where I get my, that every time I feel afraid, I think of my grandmother.
Wow. Wow. And I think that's where you get your zest for life, maybe, from her. God. Sounds like it.
Yes. Yes. She's, oh God, she's the queen bee, everything, you name it. Yeah. She's super full of life, laughed a lot. You know, she was so cute. She'd have like a beer in her hand and just watch people. And that beer would last her like 5 hours, but she's just people watching and dancing, like moving in place, still with the same beer at parties. And I'd be like, Walita, dance. And she would dance, but just a little bit, and then just watch everybody else. I'm like, she's a smart lady.
Wow. So in terms of what you do now, like, so the whole reason why I am doing this podcast is because for me, it's a real struggle to do all this marketing and put myself out there as the type of work that I do, because my work is a little bit different than you. But still the same, on the same idea of empowering people. And so that's the whole reason for the Confident Healer, because of the healing work that you do with the majority is women. I guess when you get scared about like, oh, should I put this out there? About being a sexual radiance, which is, which some people might construe as, oh, she's a tantric sex coach. Oh yeah. You know,
so dirty. She's the devil.
Like, what drives your confidence to do this work that you do? Cause it's very, I mean, it's totally different. I mean, I don't know if it's like when we grow up in America and I'm an immigrant, there's your traditional jobs, teachers, managers of something. But there's never like a coach or some type of healing work where you're working with people. I mean, all work can be healing, but you know, we're not like marketing execs or anything like that. So I'm just saying to say that, you know, I don't know is this what you always wanted? Is this what you saw yourself doing as this little firecracker, 8-year-old loving in the spot, being in the spotlight, you know, kid, like, I'm going to be a sexual radiance coach. I'm going to work. I'm going to help women.
Not at all. I wanted to be an actress.
Ah.
And, so I loved, you know, that's why I loved the modeling when I was little. And then I went to acting school as a teenager.
What?
And dad was so adorable, but we went to New York every weekend anyway. So he'd drive me on Fridays. I'd go to my class on Saturdays. And then we'd stay at my grandma's till Sunday or Monday. He drove me to auditions. Sometimes I'd stay there till the Monday to go to an audition. So no, that wasn't it. I did know that I kind of knew that I my role was going to be visible, whatever I chose to do. And I wasn't sure why, you know. I would act in front of the mirror. I would practice dance moves in front of videos and mirrors. I just kind of knew that I was going to be out there somewhere, but I didn't know what. And I, when I was 14, so I was pretty not an easy kid, as I think I've alluded to earlier. And in high school, I remember I became this little brat, and I don't know why. I think because I was bored. And so I was just like, fuck it, I need to make my life exciting. So I became a brat, and then I started to hang out with the school social worker. I'll never forget her, Miss Joan Bucco. And she tells me, so there's a new program starting. It's called the Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program. And it's for, youth leaders to learn about teen pregnancy and teach other young people about it.
Wow. This is in Connecticut?
Yep. New London.
Do they have those in the Bronx? I'm just wondering, in the inner cities.
I was actually one of the counselors and workshop leaders for the Relationship Abuse Prevention Program, which was started by Giuliani at the time.
Rudy Giuliani.
Mayor's office program. So that was
for him.
Years later, after I finished undergrad. But so she wanted me to be a participant, and I was like, I'm not going to be a participant. First of all, I'm not having sex, and I have no interest in having sex. And second of all, I am not going to be looked at like, I saw it as a negative to be a participant in the teen pregnancy prevention program. I'm like,
because it's kind of a narc. You're kind of a goody two shoes, maybe. How old were you? How old were you when this
happened? That was 14 or 15. 14.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, maybe 15. Anyway, I was 14 or 15. I remember that. It was just first freshman or sophomore year in college. And it was a program run by Connecticut College. And so I said, look, the only way I'm going to do this is if I'm one of the leaders. If not, I'm not doing it.
Of course.
And she was like, she laughed. And I was like, really? And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do it. And so she was like, just think about it. I was like, I'm not thinking about it. I either am a leader or I'm not doing it. And then she just laughed and said, okay, let me see what I can do. And she got me in as one of the leaders. And so I would write plays on sexuality.
Oh my gosh. Look at you.
It was so fun. And, I organize like fashion shows in the street, like fundraisers.
So you're this 14-year-old kid
parties
in high school doing all this shit.
Yeah, with other young people. Yeah, but these were like my ideas, because I've always been into social events. You know, like my family's. I grew up in a big party with live music. I mean, instruments. You know, things like that. So this was my thing, and so that's how I started. And I loved it. I loved the topic. I learned so much. I learned that sex is not dirty or wrong, but that it's a huge responsibility.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. And I loved sex ed in sixth grade. I was on it. Sex and drug education when I was in sixth grade. Oh my God. The only nerd. I was like in there, like, oh, how do you put on a condom on the banana? And I was like, okay, sixth grade, 12 years old. And I just loved it. I don't know, this is a little personal. And I don't know if you'll keep this for your interview, but I do believe that my love, I'm using that word loosely, for all things sexuality did spark from being an abused kid that felt some pleasure and being totally confused about why does this feel good and feel wrong at the same time.
Wow.
And I had to really reconcile and work through that. And it's funny that I think that's where my real passion came from. Like, I needed to know, I wanted to know. And then these things just kept happening in my life. And I would say magically, because I had no idea what the TPPP was, you know.
With the what?
The Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program. Okay. We used to call it TPPP. you know, so yeah. And then it just kind of evolved from there.
Wow. So, cause that, you know, from hearing about other people's sexual trauma, you know, that can break your esteem, your confidence. I mean, just everything. And that's amazing that you had this person, this a social worker, guidance counselor, mm-hmm. I guess.
The school social worker.
Yeah. That was like, hey, Angelica, here's this program. It's like almost like she knew. That's fascinating. That's thank you for sharing such a deeply. I was like, well, you're already been personal, but I did not know that about you. So thank you for sharing that. I think that will really help others who may be still struggling with their sexual trauma from their childhood or any time in their in their life. And I just want to, take a beat and just acknowledge you for sharing that with us and being even more vulnerable about yourself. And I just think it's fascinating that, you know, you're in this teen pregnancy program, whatever. TPPPPPP.
Teen Pregnancy Prevention Program by Connecticut College, yes.
I mean, does that surprise you that you're doing the work that you're doing now?
Oh, yeah. When you know how I came to this? I was working on a resume for Planned Parenthood for an education role, sex education. And I was writing my cover letter and I'm like, how long ago did I get into this work? And then I remembered that memory from when I was 14. Wow. And I did that for about 2 years. And then then that kind of progressed. And then when I went to grad school, funny enough, in one of my internships, I was working at a law firm, but then I was in charge of the teen sex program. I was in charge of helping the educator with teen sex.
Wow.
And so that was kind of totally interesting, you know. And then I've had to work right with, you know, being trained as a social worker and living in, you know, in England and in Connecticut and Child Protection Services while working in Connecticut, while living in New York. You know, I worked with lots of kids that were violated, you know, and that was, you know, the sex cases, sexual trauma cases were for a very, very long time some of my hardest cases to work
because,
you know, of that, re-traumatization of remembering, you know, but fortunately, you know, children learned different ways of coping. Mine was to remove myself from my body and become an observer. Wow. And that's what I would do to work with young people that were sexually abused. And the thing is, and probably other women and men that have been violated sexually, you can almost tell when someone else has been violated, especially a child. But you can't prove it unless they say it. And that's probably the hardest part of the job. Right. But, you know, so really followed me.
Wow. This is totally taking a different turn. Cause now I need to delve into this. So what is the tell? What is the tell?
What is it about the children's behavior that tells me that they're,
I feel like it also has to do with, because you recognize it, because you were also,
it's mostly a gut feeling. And I'm hesitant to describe behaviors because it's not prescriptive.
Right. Okay.
It's not prescriptive at all. So I don't want to necessarily describe behaviors. I don't want to scare any parents or anything like that. But you know, there's been times when I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is happening to this child and I have no way to prove it. And that's hard.
So going back to what you said about your own sexual trauma and knowing that it was wrong, but still feeling the physical sensation of pleasure, how did you reconcile that? Because that impacts your sex life as you get older, because you're like, you know, how did you resolve that? How did you figure that out? I don't know if you didn't have pleasure, but to have a functional, healthy attitude besides the TPPP program, like.
Yeah, I, well, that helped, right? All the education that I received throughout my life, that did help quite a bit. More than anything, I think what helped me was I knew intrinsically that pleasure in itself was not wrong. Like I knew that. Right. And I knew that because it made me feel good. Right. Like when, and you know,
but it's interesting because I mean, and not that you grew up Catholic, but there were Catholic things that you did. And that was, you know, there were certain things that you picked up, like intrinsically, like no sex before marriage. And was pleasure also a part of that thinking? Like, well, you shouldn't have pleasure from sex? Or
I didn't even know about pleasure from sex. I just kind of knew that you couldn't have sex and it was wrong. And I was always afraid of sex, to be honest. That's why when you know, Miss Bucko was like, you're going to be a participant. I was like, fuck no, because I'm not having sex. So I was scared of sex. I was like, oof, girl, I'm so scared. And, you know, religion played a massive role because then I became a born again Christian in the Baptist.
What? Oh my God.
Yeah.
So many things I'm finding out about you.
Around the age of 14, right? And I even got baptized and everything in La Primera Iglesia Bautista Hispana de New London, right? Okay. Connecticut. First Baptist Church. And it was an incredible experience because the pastor that we had, she was this amazing Brooklynite, loved her.
In London.
No, this is in New London, Connecticut.
Oh, excuse me. New London.
Yes. I was still a kid growing
up. Speaking to the mic, Angelica.
Yes, I will do that and enunciate. So,
not the enunciate, yeah, so, but I just didn't hear the New London. Okay.
Yes, the New London, Connecticut. Is the name of the Primera Iglesia Bautista. And so that changed a lot of things for me because actually, that made me even more fearful than I was before because I was like, oh shit, I'm gay. And like, I kind of.
How old were you when you were
I was 20s? 15 when I became.
Oh, what?
15 when I became a Christian. But then when I was 17, 18, I knew that I was like into girls. I was like, fuck, I like the girls. And I would feel guilty and I would pray to God to take it away from me.
Oh shit.
And like, yeah, I prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed to take away my feelings for this particular person that was a female. And I even made a promise that if I had sex with a man to make me pregnant, to avoid me from having sex. Like it was a mess. I was a flipping mess in my head. And it wasn't until like my early 20s when I moved back to New York. And I went to this other Baptist church where the pastor was saying that all gays are going to hell. And that was my last day stepping into a church for maybe 15 years when I went. And that was only because it was Easter and I was with my partner's parents in Italy and I had to have the experience and Christmas. So I was like, I'm going to church. But it was only because of the cultural experience that I was going to have, you know, with my then Italian family. So, you know, it's always been a little bit of a struggle. I've always struggled with enjoying things and pleasure. And now I don't. Now, if I don't feel pleasure, then I find pleasure. And the way I was, you know, able to reconcile that was, I honestly think it was information coming to me from different places where somewhere my brain was able to say, oh yeah, this is not really wrong. What's wrong is, you know, and I was one of these kids that talked. That was another thing my parents hated. They were like, the family business stays in the family. And I'm like, hell no, I need help. I'm talking to someone.
So you went to your parents about the abuse?
No, they did know, but I didn't go to them. Oh. No.
So what do you mean? Like what stays in the family? What are you referring to?
Oh, well, when I was 14 or 15, I went to my guidance counselors and I would, you know, share things about my personal life. And then my guidance counselor called my house.
Oh, okay.
And my father was like, what the F? Why are you telling people our business? And I'm like, I need someone to talk to, you know? And I really do think it was just these adults that were there. And I somehow understood. I can't tell you that there was that moment where I had the switch and was like, oh yeah, pleasure is amazing. Right. I just knew. I knew that pleasure was part of the human experience. And it was a positive part of the human experience. Mm-hmm. And I only knew that because I felt good. And there was something to that for me. You know, I also grew up with a little bit of depression around the 14, 15 period, age period. And so I had to find things to make me feel good at a, you know, at an early age.
Yeah.
That was my way out, was just feeling good.
And so going, I mean, just tying it back to confidence, because that's all I'm hearing is like, you know, building self-esteem, building confidence, like as another segue, do you think confident? I was saying earlier that I feel like confidence is dynamic because life is dynamic. Like nothing is ever static. Like you're not always going to feel 100% about everything. I think there's levels to it. Do you agree with that? Or do you agree with me? Do you think I'm right?
That there's levels to confidence?
Yeah. It's like confidence is dynamic. And does it waver with you when you think about, okay, I have this program, this program with that I want to teach my clients something, like when you're in the process of creating ways,
there is one place where my confidence doesn't waver, and that's in my work as a sex coach.
Well, damn. Boom. Drop the mic. End the conversation. All right. Well, thank you so much, Angelica Gutierrez. Yeah. See, that's, you know, when I put this call out, you know, I was like, obviously I'm going to get confident people. Right. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, and it's deeper than that for me. The confidence comes from my deep belief in the work that I do. Mm. I know that I know what I'm talking about, and I know that I know how to help people.
Yes, girl.
And I have done it, not just because I've, you know, well, yeah, there's the testimonials, but I know. It's like the best way I can explain, I think you can relate to this, Sharmila, is like when you step into a realm and you almost feel like all the support that you need is there for you, mm-hmm. and all you need to do, like I'm literally a vessel, and I know that sounds so fucking cheesy.
No, it's not cheesy.
But I really do feel like I'll sit there and don't always know what's going to come out of my mouth. I often don't know what's coming out of my mouth. I'm just listening, which
much
is unlike my real life.
Of your parents.
Oh yeah, I know. They should have just put me in the hot seat and maybe I'd be like just waiting. But like they let me be the boss. But yeah, it's like really, I think it really just comes from the fact that I've been able to heal myself and I can recognize and support men and women on this really tricky and scary journey sometimes.
Mm. Yeah, because it is. Not feeling, it's not just about feeling sexy. It's just not feeling confident about who you are. And so what I'm hearing from you from this whole amazing conversation, of the depths that we've gone into Angelica's heart and psyche and soul, actually psyche means soul in it's the Greek word means soul. Anyway. Okay.
I didn't know that. So thank you for sharing.
It's the only tidbit.
Although the word Greek did come into my head and I didn't want to say it and embarrass myself on air. Oh. So I'm glad you did.
Yeah, I'll have to fact check that, but no, I know that for a fact because I looked that up a long time ago, but, it just seems like, so your upbringing, you know, you just being you just kind of came out of the gate confident and you had your favorite aunt and you had your grandmother, you had some strong women supporting you and encouraging you, probably to the behest of your mom, like, oh my God, stop encouraging her. I can't do it. And then just having these mentors in your life, despite having some trauma that is deeply affecting, it deeply affects kind of the core of who you are, sexual trauma. I mean, yeah, especially sexual trauma. And that you could overcome that. And when you're putting together your marketing materials, your talks, your public talks, when, cause I feel like, you know, when you're working with someone, yeah, there's, you know what you're doing. There's a rapport, you've already established that. But I don't know, I guess my question is, you know, when you're putting your stuff out into the public, I guess, do you ever think about like, oh my God, what are people going to think? Are they going to think I'm a fraud? I mean, do you have any of those, do any self-doubts come in your head? Cause you know, for me, that's what always comes up, and it can be really debilitating for me personally, mm-hmm. as a woman in business. Yeah.
I think early on I did, because I was very isolated in my work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I moved from England here 4 years ago. I knew two people in Seattle, and it wasn't even in the plans for me to stay here. So when I started doing this work, when I came here,
back to the US,
I didn't have a sexuality network, if you will. So that is where I felt a little like, oh God, am I, you know, is this the right thing? Cause everything was self-taught, or going back to my studies, you know, I mean, grad school, what do you get? You know, unless you're doing your master's in human sexuality, which mine was not, you know, we do have to take sexuality classes, but it's not the core of our work. Mm-hmm. And so,
I know what it is, but tell other people who don't know, what is your master's in?
So I went to the School of Social Work at Columbia University, and my concentration was advanced generalist practice, international social welfare. And so, advanced generalist practice is just, generic therapy. And then international social welfare, because I've always had an interest in what's happening outside of our own country. Mm-hmm. And so that was my concentration. I started with social policy, but that changed. So that's where I was, in that. And I got my confidence back, by reading a lot about this stuff, because I eat this up like nothing. I just adore it. And I mm-hmm. feel like I don't have enough time to read everything that's out there. And then I became a part of a sex coach community, Sex Coach University with Dr. Patty Burton, who you met, Sharmila.
Oh, right.
And that opened up the doors for me. You know, she invited me to the World Sexual Health Congress in Mexico City last year, where I met, my God, an incredible group of people that is really hard to keep in touch with all of them. In fact, my first podcast guest I met there. So I would say that helped me to remind myself that I do know what I'm talking about. And then it's also expanding my knowledge, because as part of this program, there's a, you know, Dr. Patty has a PhD in sexuality. And so she has lots of amazing materials that she offers. And so that for me, the value of the cohort mm-hmm. is where I, you know, that's valuable to me, but also the content of this program, the fact that I have other colleagues to call on and draw upon for support has really helped my confidence as a sex coach a whole lot, that I know was, it would not have been the same had I not joined this program, because I really was flying solo. And that's hard to do, you know, when you have nobody else to draw on. You're already working on home. You know, I have fellow entrepreneurial friends such as yourself and other women, except not many of them are doing what I do.
Right.
And so it's like, so where do I find my community? So the confidence comes from community and for me. And I think that that's quite valuable for a lot of people when we have the support, which is why it's important to get a coach or a therapist, which I am now offering, therapeutic services here in Washington. And then, but I do believe that we all need support on this journey. And I understand that maybe we can't afford to hire someone. I want to make sure that nobody goes unsupported. Mm-hmm. So there's something out there for someone in the work that I'm doing. And so I will be announcing some, you know, free workshops that people can come on.
Do you have a name for your upcoming podcast?
I believe I'm going to go with Evolving and subtitled A Sexual Radiance Experience.
Ooh. Very cool.
So that's what I have. That's the working title for now. It could change before the podcast is launched. But we will be covering all kinds of things, including self-empowerment and confidence.
Yeah.
Just one more thing on the confidence. I want people to know that there's no shame. And I know it's hard to not feel confident. It's almost embarrassing to not feel confident around other people. And I want everyone to know that you are born confident. We all are born confident. And it's mostly because we don't know better. Because nobody's there telling us, oh, you're an ugly, wrinkled child. You know, and even if they did, we probably wouldn't even know what they're saying. And, you know, like I've heard this example quite a bit, you know, children are not afraid to say what they feel. You know, they yell in the street if they are hungry. Right. And so we all did that at one time. So we all knew that we were worth being heard and seen. And somewhere along the way that got lost. And so I want to make sure that people are coming back to their roots, coming back to that inner confident person that's ready to live a fuller life and ready to be seen and ready to show up. And I want to offer you a community where you can do that and thrive with other people, because we all need sisterhood and brotherhood and community to move forward and overcome some of the deepest traumas that we have inside.
Yeah. Having community is so important. Building your confidence, especially as a solopreneur. So I'll just put a button on it and we will end this conversation right here. I just want to thank you so much, Angelica, for being here today, for being my very first guest on this first episode. And you can find Angelica, just look out for her upcoming podcast coming out in the fall. It's called Evolving: A Sexual Radiance Experience, where she will be offering tips for sexual freedom and more. And you can find her on Facebook and Instagram under Dare to Fly Coaching. And if you're curious about working with Angelica, you can send her an email with healer in the title to claim the 30-minute complimentary session with her. And you can email her at daretoflyinfo@gmail.com. We'll have all this information in the show notes. So once again, thank you so much, Angelica, for being here today. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you. It's been an honor and a privilege. Thank you so much for inviting me, Sharmila.
And thank you so much for listening. Please remember to bookmark my website, www.theconfidenthealer.net. This is where you can easily listen to the podcast and where you can find the guest info in the show notes. It's also really important to subscribe and rate the show because it does grow my podcast. Again, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye.